Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, known as Lila Purushottama, appeared as the son of Vasudev, but immediately left his father's home and went to Vrindavan to expand his loving relationship with his confidential devotees. In Vrindavan, the Lord killed many demons, and afterwards he returned to Dwaraka, where, according to Vedic principles, he married many wives, who were the best of women, begot through them hundreds of sons, and performed sacrifices for his own worship to establish the principles of household life. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15.15, Vedaischa sarvar aham eva vedyaha, by all the Vedas, it is Krishna who is to be known. Lord Sri Krishna, setting an example by his own behavior, performed many ritualistic ceremonies described in the Vedas and established the principles of grihastha life by marrying many wives and begetting many children, just to show people in general how to be happy by living according to Vedic principles. The center of Vedic sacrifice is Krishna, Vedascha sarvar aham eva vedyaha. To advance in human life, human society must follow the Vedic principles personally demonstrated by Lord Krishna in his householder life. The real purpose of Krishna's appearance, however, was to manifest how one can take a part in loving affairs with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Reciprocations of loving affairs in ecstasy are possible only in Vrindavan. Therefore, just after his appearance as the son of Vasudev, the Lord immediately left for Vrindavana. In Vrindavana, the Lord not only took part in loving affairs with his father and mother, the gopis and the covered boys, but also gave liberation to many demons by killing them. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya Sadunam Binashecha Dushkritam, the Lord appears in order to protect the devotees and kill the demons. This was fully exhibited by his personal behavior. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is understood by Arjuna to be Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, the eternal transcendental supreme person. Here also we find the words Utpadya Teshu Purushaham. Therefore, it is to be concluded that the absolute truth is Purusha, a person. The impersonal feature is but one of the features of his personality. Ultimately, he is a person. He is not impersonal. And not only is he Purusha, a person, but he is the Lila Purushottama, the best of all persons. Jato gata pitrigrihat vrajam editartho hatva ripunsuta shatani kritorudara utpadya teishu purusha kratupir samigye atmanam atmanigamam pratayan janeshu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, known as Lila Purushottama, appeared as the son of Vasudeva but immediately left his father's home and went to Vrindavan to expand his loving relationship with his confidential devotees. In Vrindavan, the Lord killed many demons, and afterwards he returned to Dwaraka, where, according to Vedic principles, he married many wives, who were the best of women, begot through them hundreds of sons, and performed sacrifices for his own worship to establish the principles of household life. It's only a few days before Janmashtami, the appearance anniversary of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, Father of all, and the source and the object of everyone's affection, attachment, and love. And this particular verse is kind of an expansion of the famous verse from Bhagavad Gita, which Srila Prabhupada refers to in his purport, which probably or almost all of those who have Indian origin would know by heart. I know that this verse is even learned in schools in India still today. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanarthaya sambhavam yuge yuge. So the Supreme Lord says, sambhavam yuge yuge, I come millennium after millennium for three purposes. And first purpose is paritranaya sadhunam, to save paritran, sadhus or devotees. And then vinashaya. Vinashaya means to finish. Cha duskritam. Duskritam means people who don't know how to behave properly. Uncultured people, demoniac people. And third one is dharma samstapanartaya, to re-establish dharma or the principles of real human life centered around serving the Supreme Lord. And I was thinking that the most important aspect in our lives is how relevant the subject is to us personally, right? And so, you know, hearing about Krishna, sometimes we may not understand why do we have to hear about Krishna, right? And sometimes we can see some people, devotees, sitting at the class and nodding on a regular basis, fully agreeing with what has been said. Because, yeah, well, some people might be genuinely tired. But many times it's a kind of subconscious reaction to irrelevance or not understanding the relevance of the subject to my personal life. And therefore relevance, I would say that, you know, of the three phases of Krishna conscious development, theoretical understanding, practical application, and achievement, the goal, sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, and of course the goal, Srila Prabhupada indicated in the purport, is developing love of God, divine love. So for us, the abhideya is the central point, because this is why we study theory, because we want to apply this theory in our lives, and only by application of the theory, by practical activity, we can achieve the goal, we can achieve the love of God. And therefore, Janmashtami is meant to be very relevant in our lives. We want Krishna to appear in the same way as he appeared in the prison house of Kamsa. So we are in exactly the same position, because we are in the prison house of material existence, right? In the same way as the four walls are limiting those who are in the prison cell, limiting their freedom, so our freedom is also limited by the four walls. What are the four walls? Birth, diseases, old age, and death. And in the same way as prisoners are experiencing so many miseries in prison house, so in the same way this material world is so full of miseries. And we don't even want to start mentioning them, because there are too many even to list them. And we all know by experience that, you know, material world means trouble at every step. And if we do not experience any troubles, then we just have to wait a little bit. It is coming. Actually, you know, sometimes people are enjoying watching horror movies. It's very easy to understand how something horrible can bring pleasure. Because people, after, you know, finishing the horror movie, they think, my God, after all, my life is not that bad. And it makes them feel better. So this is the material world. It is so bad that we need to, you know, focus on something which is much worse, you know, to feel a little relief. But we don't want to experience miseries. How many of you would like to have misery as soon as possible? No volunteers. Because it's natural. This is the nature of the soul, anandamayo bhasat. We want to be happy in our lives. Therefore, we want, in the same way as Krishna appeared in the prison house of Vasudev. And where is the prison? The prison is actually inside, right? Because Kamsa, who is Kamsa? Kamsa is the false ego personified. Even though he was a real person living more than 5,000 years ago, but he personifies the utmost level of materialism, or we can say false ego. And therefore, so many demons are sent by Kamsa, because all the anarthas, all the terrible qualities are manifested by the false ego only. This is the root of the material existence, our false identity with this world. And so we want Krishna to appear also in a prison cell where Vasudev is situated. And who is Vasudev? Of course, he is the father of Krishna. But what is the meaning of the word Vasudev? Satvam Vishuddha Vasudeva Shabditam, Bhagavatam says. Yes, not just goodness, but Satva Vishuddha. It's pure goodness, it is transcendence. So Vasudeva means crystal clear, pure spiritual consciousness. So this is who Vasudev is. And so Vasudev is imprisoned in the, you know, in Kamsa's cell. And as soon as Krishna appears, and what Krishna says, carry me out from here to Vrindavan. And what happens next? Yeah, the chains break. All the guards fall asleep. All the doors are open. And then Vasudev just walks straight through with no hindrances whatsoever. So as soon as Krishna, as soon as we take Krishna up, what does it mean? Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's the result. But what does it mean to take Krishna on our hands? Why Vasudev took Krishna on his hands and why he started walking? Because Krishna told him so. So to take Krishna up means to follow Krishna's instructions. Instead of doing, as long as we do in our lives what we want, we are in chains. We are bound up by the, well, ropes at least, three modes of material nature, right? But as soon as we take Krishna up, as soon as we start doing what Krishna wants in our lives, then the chains break, the doors open, and we are free. And this is what we're looking for. This is what our aspiration is. So how many of you would like Krishna to appear on this coming Sunday in your hearts? Arivo! Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan Ki Jai! So this is our purpose. And then, now it is very important to understand, you know, how do we do that? How can we achieve that goal? And, of course, Srila Prabhupada mentions many points, but then he makes very central statement here in this purport. He says, the real purpose of Krishna's appearance, however, you know, he has many purpose, but what's the core purpose? Was to manifest how one can take part in loving affairs with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Reciprocation of loving affairs in ecstasy are possible only in Vrindavan. This is why Krishna wanted Vasudev to take him to Vrindavan, because he wanted to enjoy the loving affairs with his devotees on the topmost level. And this is the key. And that is being focused on developing our loving relationship with Krishna. Because we know that the purpose of life, I mean, you ask anyone just on the street, what's the purpose of life? And people will say, to be happy. You know, they might say, you know, to make money, to excel in work or in career, whatever. But, you know, if you take it a few steps further, why do you do that? I want to be happy. And what is the happiness? Is there happiness without love? There is no happiness without love. And love should be real. And there is only one real love, is our loving relationship with Krishna. And of course, it does not exclude loving everyone else. Actually, when we love Krishna, our love towards everyone else becomes real and permanent. So this is the key. And it's always good when devotees also contribute to thinking. So do we have any reasons to love Krishna? Yes or no? Anyone can suggest what are the reasons why should we love Krishna? Yes. Because he is the perfect beloved, because he perfectly reciprocates with us. Yes? Anyone else? Yes, Silvan Brahma. Because he loves us, yeah. How that manifests? That's an interesting point. How Krishna's love towards us manifests. Nobody knows. Okay, go in the Brahma. Okay, Krishna's mercy manifested through Guru. Okay. No one can think of any ways Krishna shows his love? Yes? Yeah, he breaks the chains of material existence, Brahma. Prasadam. Definitely, yeah. That's Krishna's love, yes. Through his devotees, yes. Devotees show, you know, because otherwise, what's the reason? I mean, you know, some people who are not related to in any way, shape or form, except through Krishna, would, you know, look after you, take care of you, do so many things for you, free of charge. That's love. Yeah, this is the, and I think this is the main point, that love of Krishna, of course, it manifests directly. And Krishna is really an amazing personality. And he really loves his devotees. And it is manifested in so many ways through his pastimes. And, you know, a couple of pastimes, Srila Prabhupada mentions about killing the demons. And for us, Krishna's pastimes, they are divided into two main categories. One is Nitya Lila, eternal pastimes, wherein Krishna enjoys loving reciprocation with his perfect devotees. And another one is Naimittika Lila. And Naimittika Lila is specific pastimes meant for this world, which are not really needed in the spiritual world. And one category of Naimittika Lila pastimes is killing the demons, because there are no demons in the spiritual world. So Krishna manifests those pastimes only here. And Acharyas, especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur, says that those pastimes, Naimittika Lila pastimes, wherein Krishna kills the demons, are very relevant for us, because by killing the demons, Krishna removes the obstacles on our path of developing our love for Krishna. So he removes different, what we call anarthas, or unwanted types of contamination within our hearts. And I just wanted to briefly mention, because we wouldn't have too much time, two pastimes of Krishna, wherein, which are happening in Vrindavan, but in these pastimes he doesn't really kill demons, but he deals with demigods who have demoniac mentality, or materialistic mentality. Materialistic means demoniac, right? It just depends on the degree. And I was thinking that for us as devotees, this is very relevant, because demigods are devotees, but still, because they have materialistic desires, sometimes when they start acting on these materialistic desires, they manifest, we can safely say, demoniac behavior. And very, very vivid example, very clear example of that is when Lord Indra was offended, when he was not properly worshipped, when the sacrifice meant for his pleasure was stopped. And he was so offended that he decided to do what? To kill Krishna and kill all his devotees in Vrindavan, right? Can you think of a more demoniac, you know, ways of thinking, or more demoniac attempt? And this is a devotee, one of the official devotees, right? Holding very high position on a universal scale. And yet he decides to kill Krishna, and he decides to kill every single devotee of Krishna by sending torrential rain and hail on Vrindavan. So we can see how it works. And unfortunately, we are not immune to that danger, to have that demoniac mentality, to be affected by that demoniac mentality. And Acharyas are explaining, well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining specifically, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as well, that just by hearing about these pastimes, hearing and discussing these pastimes actually frees us, makes us free from this danger of falling prey to that anartha, specific anartha. And so, it was very amazing fact. Most of you know this pastime, this Leela. How after it was all done, one amazing thing, again, Krishna's love. Krishna's love towards everyone, towards all his devotees, even when devotees manifest such a naughty behavior, like Lord Indra. He was very naughty in that sense. And Indra was really angry. But how Krishna responded? It's very amazing, right? That Krishna was not actually thinking. Even though Nectar of Devotion mentions that Krishna became a little bit upset with Indra, and for a moment he was thinking, I have to punish Indra. But then he immediately changed his mentality. He thought, anyway, never mind, let him do whatever he wants to do. I'll just take care of my devotees and that should be it. And then he lifted, you know. Krishna was thinking like a little boy. Okay, it's raining now. So everyone is suffering from all these torrential rains. And so to protect everyone from rain, we need an umbrella. An umbrella should be big enough for everyone to fit under. So what can we use for an umbrella? And then what he did, he just picked up Govardhan Hill from the ground and he held Govardhan Hill 7 days and nights, non-stop. It says on a fingertip of his little finger on his left hand. Not just on the left hand, not just on the little finger, on a fingertip of his left hand. Perfect balance for 7 days and seven nights. And Krishna was only 7 years old. Can we imagine? Little boy. I don't know. How old is Abai now? Anyone knows? 13. He's 13 already? Huh? He's 13. Can you imagine a boy twice as young as a boy doing that? This is what Krishna did. And so this is amazing, right? To think about it. One of the proofs that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that he can do things which other people can't even imagine doing. And he just, you know, waited till Indra came back to his senses, and it took Indra 7 days to think about it. And then, after all, Indra realized that, oh my God, this is the Supreme Lord, and I really offended him so badly. And he was actually so worried that, you know, when he realized the grievance of his offense, he was so worried, he was thinking, Krishna will never forgive me. Because I was trying to kill not only him, but his devotees also. And we know how dear devotees are to Krishna. And he was thinking, I have to take it, you know, I have to go for a coaching session. And he went to Lord Brahma and he said, you know, what do I do now? You know, how do I get forgiveness? And Lord Brahma said, oh man, you really blew it. Because I committed an offense, I stole Krishna's, you know, friends and his calves, but, you know, you tried to kill them, so I really struggled to get forgiveness myself. I don't know. Your chances are really slim, man. And then Indra became even more worried, and so then he went to Lord Shiva, he went to all the demigods. And also he went to Surabhi because his calculation was that Surabhi cow is so dear to Krishna, so if she will petition on my behalf, I have more chances. So actually all of them went together, you know. Indra had a big support team behind him, and they all went to Krishna. And Indra was expecting that it's going to be really hard, because it was very hard for Brahma. Brahma had to, you know, actually, chapter 14 of the 10th canto is full of such an eloquent prayers, right? We still repeat, so many thousands of years later, we still quote these amazing prayers of Lord Brahma, full of mature realizations. And Lord Brahma, you know, offered all these prayers, and he really repented from the core of his heart. And Krishna didn't even look at him. And Brahma was heartbroken. And actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that what Krishna was thinking at that time, you know, because he was under the influence of Yoga Maya, thinking himself to be the coward boy. And Krishna was, you know, because Brahma was lying across the path and was not, you know, Krishna couldn't pass. So he blocked Krishna's path. And Krishna was thinking, who is that four-headed man? What is he talking about? I'm not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm a coward boy. And my friends are waiting for me. Why is he speaking all these things and preventing me from going and joining them in my games? Like that. But finally, after a long time, Brahma got, you know, the result. Krishna forgave him. He said, all right, Brahma, you're fine. And so, you know, Indra expected it to be much harder. And so with that expectation, he came. But Krishna really likes surprises. And as soon as, you know, Indra started, you know, asking for forgiveness, Krishna just looked at him, he smiled, and he said, Indra, no problem. I just did that because you became too puffed up, too proud. You forgot about your position, being my servant, and so I just taught you a lesson. So now you are, rectified. Now you can just go back. You know, something Indra never expected. He was thinking, okay, maybe Krishna will spare me, but I'll never, you know, get my position back. But Krishna said, just go back and continue as a king of heaven, etc. And then, everyone was so happy that Indra was forgiven, and then all the demigods, they performed big puja and abhishek and everything. But why was that so easy for Indra to be forgiven as opposed to Lord Brahma? Because on the external level, Lord Brahma's offense was much less serious than Indra's offense, right? That the attempt Lord Brahma made was much less, lesser offense. And the Acharyas are actually explaining that the reason for that, because after being under the Govardhan Hill for 7 days and seven nights, Krishna was so happy because he fulfilled every single aspiration of every single devotee in Vrindavan, because they all wanted to be with Krishna 24/7, right? And they've got that exactly, 24/7. 24 hours for 7 days and nights, they were with Krishna. All together, they could enjoy their rasas with Krishna. And so because the devotees were so happy, and Krishna was so happy, and when Indra came, and in fact, Indra, indirectly, he facilitated that situation. And because of that, because of all those reasons, Because Indra, by his offense, he united all the devotees around Krishna. And so therefore he was so easily forgiven. But what Brahma did, even though superficially it was much less serious, but he separated Krishna from his friends and from his goals. And that's why Krishna was not really happy. So it's just, you know, one illustration how dear the devotees are to Krishna. And that's why it is so dangerous to offend devotees or make devotees unhappy in any way, shape or form, because Krishna becomes very unhappy. And this is what Krishna takes as something very, very serious. What to speak of doing something which discourages devotees from being with Krishna or being in the association of devotees and actually leaving the association of devotees. That's a very, very serious offense. And of course, if we act in a different way, if we act in a way which actually makes devotees happy, which makes devotees enthused, enlivened, which makes them feel loved, supported, then that really, really makes Krishna happy. And as a result, if Krishna is happy, then what's happening? We are happy as well. How many of you had that experience? When you actually made devotee or few devotees happy, one way or the other, you felt really happy? Anyone had that experience? So this is actually the key. How to gain the divine love. As Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Vaishnava Seva Paramasiddhi Prema Latikara Mula. He says that serving Vaishnavas is the best way to achieve Paramasiddhi. What is Paramasiddhi? The top perfection. And Prema Latikara Mula. This is the very root of the creeper of Prema, divine love. And, you know, just a little illustration. I mean, there are so many illustrations in scriptures how Krishna loves his devotees, how Krishna loves Arjuna, for example, so much that he sits, not only drives Arjuna's chariot, not only cleans his horses and looks after his chariot as a menial servant, but at the battlefield he sits in front of Arjuna. And actually, he receives the arrows in his own chest, which are meant for Arjuna. So he acts as a living shield to protect Arjuna from the arrows of his enemies. So, of course, we hear all this, but it does not mean that these things were happening many thousands of years ago. These things are always happening even today. And, you know, I just wanted to share a little pastime which I've heard some time back from the devotees, which was really, really astonishing. How Krishna loves his devotees and how that manifests even today, even now. Maybe some of you heard that there was an earthquake a couple of years back that was in New Zealand. And the New Varshana temple, which is near the Auckland, was damaged and the deities were broken. Not Christchurch, no, at New Varshana. It's near Auckland. And they had marble Gornitai deities. Yeah, Christchurch also suffered. Yeah, but I heard what happened in that temple. And I was wondering, you know, why Krishna, you know, arranged things in such a way that the deities broke. What's, you know, no devotees suffered, but deities were broken. And they had to replace the deities. And I had that question for a while, like, long time. And then Krishna arranged that I've got the answer. One devotee narrated what actually happened. That during the earthquake, it was actually the mid-day arati, the noon arati, you know, 12:30 arati, going on. And few devotees were at the temple room, including Mother Urmila. She was also there. This is because, you know, she spent some time in the quietest fun time in this community. And so the pujari was doing the arati to Gorni time. And then the earthquake started. And of course, because pujari is standing on this side, which is, you know, on our left, and on the deity's right hand side, he was standing next to Lord Nityananda. And when the earthquake started, pujari quickly put down the arati articles, and he went, and he was holding Lord Nityananda to prevent him from falling off the altar because of the pushes. And then what happened, there was a big push, and the whole altar came down. The ceiling of the altar came down. And what happened, you know, because pujari was holding onto Lord Nityananda, and Lord Nityananda broke in half on the waist level, and effectively he pushed pujari out, and pujari flew out of the altar, and then the whole altar came down. So basically what happened, Lord Nityananda, you know, devotee was thinking, I'm protecting Lord Nityananda, but as but Lord Nityananda actually protected his devotee and sacrificed himself for that purpose. This is just one episode how dear devotees are to Krishna, that he is ready to sacrifice himself. Okay, nothing happened to, of course, nothing happened to Lord Nityananda. He's still there. But, you know, he sacrificed his own deity for the sake of his devotee. And there are so many examples. Because Krishna's pastimes were not just happening 5,000 years ago. They are still happening. And all of us, we have the opportunity to take the direct part in these pastimes. So this is why we joined this movement for. We want our whole life to be a big, you know, play. Like children are playing and they are not worried about anything, right? But the adults have to live very serious and many times boring life. But children can enjoy life, and it's fun. And so this is what Krishna consciousness is offering us. And this is the door we have the opportunity to open for ourselves if we use that right key. Just focusing our whole attention and intention on one thing only. How can we make Krishna's devotees around us happy, enthused, and satisfied in all respects? And we can see that the temple, which is so much focused on that, Chaupati temple in Vrindavan, is really showing what kind of miracles this focus produces. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki jai.